This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 351, brought to you by Graphically, an iFanboy listener just like you. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 351, The Aftermath. My name is Ron Richards, and as always, I'm here with my best friend, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi, Ron.
And Josh Flanagan.
I'm not doing anybody else's bits from now on.
We're from the website.
I'm putting a foot down. We're not doing it.
We are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the wonderful world of comics. And every week we read a large stack of comics, and then one of us says, you know, I think this one was my pick of the week, and writes a review of it on ifanboy.com. Then we come back here to talk about that, as well as many, many, many other comic book titles and other things that are interesting to us and to you and to your mom. Before we get to the show, though, a quick warning and a reminder. We're going to be talking about what happens in the comics, so we might spoil them. So please don't get mad if we do, because we warned you, and that's what makes it okay. So that said, Joshua, you had the pick?
Yes, Ronald. And Conarchus, I believe, is the longer version of that.
Conarchus.
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 Yeah.
He's down by Rockaway.
Brooklyn's named after him. I don't know how they got Connor out of that. Pick of the week is Hawkeye number 2. No real big choice about this one this week. I was I'm looking at it right away. Right away, I'm like, that's a very nice cover. And then inside, it just got better from there. I'll be honest. Story was fine. I like this characterization of Clint. But it's just like the most gorgeous thing I've ever looked at in comic book form. I don't know if there's a better. We've just been getting treated to wonderful looking comic book after wonderful looking comic book for, it seems like, the last year or so. You know, not all of them, but the ones that are really beautiful stand out from J.H. Williams to Paulo Rivera, you know, to the stuff that Somni's doing on Rocketeer and things like that. And this might be my favorite. This might be the best looking one. I think David Aja, or Aja, I'm just going to say Aja for simplicity's sake, has brought this style to the book. And I remember really liking his work on Iron Fist, but, you know, he did like a couple of issues and they would have people fill in, and I don't know how long he's going to go on this, but I'll take everything I can get. It feels like a modern updating of David Mazzucchelli, but with sort of he's got this thing where he's got a ton of panels per page, but it doesn't feel crowded and overdone. Which is really interesting because it's sort of simplistic but also really complicated, and it just kind of works together. The whole thing, and then you take the coloring. Matt Hollingsworth has put it all in. It's not quite monotone, but it's very heavily sort of a neutral tone and a purplish tone. And then there's bits of yellow in there and you know, some skin tone and stuff like that. But it's got a hue to the whole thing, this sort of purplishness. And it's just there's sequences in here that I've never seen before. Connor put up in the best panels of the week, he put up the sort of pacing part where you see everything that happens in the time that it takes Clint to pull back his bow and shoot. I think it's 3 arrows, and it's just the 3 words that come out of Kate's mouth as she's saying it, and all the things that he thinks in that time just sort of illustrate how fast he's going. Sort of the kind of trick you'd see in a flash book or something like that, but done in a totally original and cool style. I loved that the first thing I actually noticed was on is the third page. He's talking to Kate and he's describing who she is in between what she's saying. And there's a black and white panel that shows her sort of just like broken down to just the shadows and the hard lines, and it's all brushed. You can just sort of see they just kind of didn't color that part. And you know, he's saying that she was Hawkeye once and describing their situation. Now, I know that she was originally sort of solicited to be in the series, and she wasn't in the first issue at all. So I don't know if maybe this was originally the first issue and they thought of a different one. They did another one, but it doesn't matter. I wasn't thrilled about her being in it, but I actually liked her a lot in this, and I liked the relationship. They aged her up, I think, a little bit, so it doesn't get super creepy. But they also sort of, you know, mentioned the fact that she's really young and she's, you know, very different, but seems very different from Clint, but she's actually really similar. And it looks like they're gonna go with a non-sexual relationship.
No, they're not.
Yeah, no,
they're not at all.
I know, but it's at least sort of, you know, there's a very like. He's going to try not to. I don't know. I guess you're right. But either way, I mean, it works that way. I like that there's a creepiness about it, sort of, and it works, and she can hold her own against him. And the story itself was there's a circus and it's full of bad guys, and then the audience is all super rich bad guys because they're opening a super exclusive hotel, and the bad guys are going to rob the other bad guys, and Clint has to stop that for some reason. I don't entirely understand, but. It was just a way to hang out with these people, I guess, a little bit. And you find out that the ringmaster, whoever he is, was trained by the swordsman also. And so there's a familial sort of connection there. It was just another, just like the first one, it was another sort of single issue, self-contained. And I really liked it a lot.
I think this is borrowing a page from the Daredevil playbook and going a little step further in that this the first two issues, you know, issue 1, issue 2, they don't look like any other comic, like especially any other Marvel comic on the shelves.
No.
Like straight down from the cover design to the credits page. To that purplish hue that Hollingsworth did such a great job on, the breakdowns and the panel organization that Aja's doing, it is wholly a unique thing that came out of nowhere, And yep. I know that when this got announced, I mean, I know there's been a lot, you know, there's some people who are critical of Matt Fraction's work, and Josh, you in particular, you know, and so there was kind of like, oh, what are we going to see here? And this, I mean, I think the best thing they could do is to do this sort of thing where it's like nothing that we're reading right now. And that way it stands out. And on top of it, it's great. And I'm really curious, and I got to go back, see if I can find some interviews, something like that, to hear if he talked about this. But I know when I talked to Fraction about not Daredevil, about Defenders, he was experimenting with a pseudo Marvel style, you know, kind of approach where he was, you know, leaning more on the artist and kind of just giving kind of like, okay, here's what's going to happen. And I want, you know, like, I wonder how much of these panel organizations is Ajax saying, okay, well, this is what happens. I could do a really cool thing here, you know, and it's going back to that Wolverine one shot that we read that had much similar, in fact, I think probably more crazy layouts.
Yeah, right? that's a really good point. I think that you could definitely be working from a more plot style script and just say, you know, this is what happens on these pages. This is what happens on these pages, because I don't know how you can script a page that has 30 panels of faces. I mean, you could, but it would be sort of redundant. No, that's great. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think a lot of credit has to go to Fraction because I'm not usually a big fan of his, but I've been really wholly engaged in these two issues.
Yeah.
Not just from the character work. The character work's been good, but I also think the stories have been fun. I also think this issue is better than the last issue, which I liked quite a bit. But this is a great issue. Interesting that Hawkeye's been in costume through the course of two issues in one panel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't even in costume at all in this panel.
Which
I don't mind. I don't mind at all. It's just funny from the, you know, from the modern day sensibility. People tend to not usually like that, but I thought this was exciting. It was fun. It felt really dense, but it didn't feel overly like it was. Didn't feel like it was a chore to read.
Mm-hmm.
This is, as Ron said, came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we all knew this would look good because we all think that David Ajax is a great artist, but the way these two guys are working together, and however it is they are working, is just wonderful. They have clearly a chemistry together.
Well, you know, brass tacks of it is I've never liked Matt Fraction's work that much. I liked reading the Invincible Iron Man in One Piece. I've never liked anything he's done in issue form, I don't think. Iron Fist, actually, but that was with David Ajax. So you know, maybe that's, but I really like this. I'm not seeing a lot of the things that used to bug me about the work. So maybe, you know, he's maturing, or like you said, he's doing a different style, or, you know, obviously he's always had talent. That's never been the thing. It's just a stylistic thing I never really liked. But I don't feel it here. And I think Connor sort of said, you know, like the pages are super packed. I mean, these layouts should be overwhelming and complicated, and it should feel like there's too much happening on a page, but because the line work is so minimalized, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, this is I can't think of an artist I'd rather see doing a book right now.
This is long overdue. I mean, especially, I mean, after getting the taste of him on that Wolverine thing, and I mean, like, this has been way long overdue. The one critique or criticism I might have, which, and who knows, you know, and Connor, we talked about this not on the show, but it's just that, as of right now, like, I don't feel like this is, I'm not saying this isn't Hawkeye, but I feel like this could be, you know, the only thing defining him as Hawkeye is the fact that he uses a bow and arrow, and that the girl Hawkeye is there. Other than that, this could be an independent comic of a new character.
I don't know.
I don't read enough Hawkeye and that sort of thing, but like it definitely, like, it just feels very, I don't know, generic, but blank slatey. And maybe he's doing that on purpose, you know?
I mean, that's sort of, you know, I think what it is breaking down the character from being people make him too wisecracky thing, I think, sometimes, you know, when he used to sort of be like, hey, tall socks, you know, would be talking to Hank or something like that. Like, they've just modernized it and broken that down a little. But I don't think that he's completely neutral. I'm seeing a lot of, you know, the conversation on the phone with Kate at the end was definitely, it was like him trying to grow up and be mature, but also not so dark as Bendis had brought him.
Right.
You know, Bendis had sort of completely aged him in the post-Ronin era.
Yeah, it was, and he was angry, and it was, you know, so
that sucked.
Yeah,
like in retrospect, at the time it wasn't horrible. Like it didn't feel right. If you're gonna keep this, you know, the way that Marvel is, it's just sort of, its time sort of stands still but moves forward at the same time. Like, make him a little more fun.
But yeah, it's just, I'm looking at the panel where after the whole thing goes down and they jump on the boat to get away, and he yells, "I'm great at boats."
And that feels like Hawkeye. Like, I'm thinking back to my hardcover of sort of the classic couple of stories that he had.
Yeah.
It seems pretty close. He used to ride a mechanical horse.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just saying. Yeah. Also, he's so good looking in this. He's got Daniel Craig level jeans.
Yeah, it's not really funny.
It's very nice.
The And the thing to note, if you haven't read this book, is that so far these two are one and done stories. I mean, there's clearly a character thread, just like if you watch a TV show, you know, where there's an ongoing plot line, but mostly it's about the plot of that episode. Like this, you could just read two. You don't need to read one.
Oh yeah, exactly. I feel like one and two are kind of setting the stage for what this is, where it's basically, you know, modern urban Robin Hood. You know what I mean? Where it's,
you know, let's start with two. If you haven't read it, yeah. One was fine. I enjoyed one. It looked beautiful. But character wise, story wise, I thought two blew it away. So if you want to start with a series, you don't want to go for two comics. Just get one, get two.
Like literally, this feels like a first issue. It feels like it could have been the first issue. Like it was one of the options to make the first one.
Yeah. I read this digitally, and I gotta admit that it looks beautiful on my Nexus 7.
Yeah, so. It does look nice.
So.
Now, Josh, you said there was a clear choice, but to me there was a lot of really good books this week.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was Before Watchmen, Silk Spectre number 3, which I thought was clearly the best issue of the series.
It was tight. It was
really good. It brought the story of Laurie to a head. It was dramatic. There was a lot of sort of twisty elements to it. There was the whole beginning of it was an acid trip drawn in a very technicolor, crazy layout style that wasn't overwhelming. Lots of tragedy. Things happened to Laurie in the background that she doesn't know about that's going to bring her down emotionally. And there's a little nod to the present when the comedian shows up and finds a little happy face button with the hippies and decides he likes it. So I thought this was wonderful, Ron. Did you?
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. I thought it was, I mean, it's continuing just the artistic, you know, accomplishment that Amanda Connor's doing with this book, where it's just, you know, we marveled in the first issue how she was sticking to the 9-panel grid. And they still are in a way, but you know, going to you know, more of a, but much more of a flexible kind of situation, especially with the trip and that page that where it just rotates in on her was just it was just amazing. And then the drama just gets turned up when you see her mother freaking out because she ran away and calling Hollis Mason for help, and he's, you know, being the calm voice that Hollis is, going, well, let her do her thing and she'll be okay, and then her mom gets all pissed off and calls the comedian and he fucks shit up. But while that stuff is happening on the background, she's really given the opportunity to kind of come into her own, and you understand now more the motivation of why she does become Silk Spectre. And again, the fantasy panels are just I mean, it's like you forget about them, and then the moment you forget about them, there's one, they're timed perfectly, they're not overused. The last one, when she's sleeping and it's in that position, you know, it's the guy and the girl, and then she's sleeping by herself, you know, little does she know what happened to her boyfriend. Just great. I thought this issue was fantastic. So
yeah.
This is
one of the few I'm really excited when it comes out for these. Yeah, good stuff.
Cool.
I assume that neither of you have read any of The Cape or The Cape 1969.
I read the first Cape. I haven't been reading the 69 one.
Okay, basically in The Cape, a guy has power of flight and he's a jerk. So 1969 is the story of, I guess, his dad and where the power came from in Vietnam. And it's by a story that was originally by Joe Hill, but this is written by Jason Ciaramella, who co-wrote or pretty much wrote The Cape, the last series. And the art's by this guy named Nelson Daniel. And it's good. It feels a little like Garth Ennis Light almost. And the art has this wonderful – it's almost like halfway between the dude who does Lock and Key, Gabriel Rodriguez, and with just a touch of – non-silly Rob Guillory, if that makes sense to you. I don't know if that's exactly the way to put it, but the guy does all of the art himself, color and everything, and it's got this like beautiful, like cool, like halftone stuff that they put on everything that sort of gives it a little bit of a throwbacky notion. It's very quick. It's kind of a breezy read. It's violent, and it's a dude flying around and wrecking a prison camp in Vietnam. It's pretty good, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it, and I've been enjoying this sort of, I guess it's a mini series all the way through, but it's a great looking book, and I'd be surprised if you don't see this artist around a lot more, so keep an eye out for it. But if you like The Cape, and I thought that first short story. I thought it was really, really well done. I liked it a lot. And I think this is actually just continuing that sort of tone from IDW. But just want to make sure I brought it up for people.
All right.
All right. And then over at Boom. Now, we have talked before in that a licensed property is many times not very good. However, now we are starting the third series, this one ongoing of Planet of the Apes.
They just won't quit.
They won't. Gabriel Hardman and Karina Bechko are writing this one, not drawing it. It's a different artist than the last one. And it's still I can't get enough of this. It's just really fun, and they're bringing, like, it's sort of moving away from the people who we saw before, but some of the same characters are involved, and we push forward a little more in history. But we're also going backwards to see how they blew it up. That's what we're going to see some of, and it's this just ongoing Planet of the Apes story. And I'm not like a Planet of the Apes guy either. Like, you know, I liked the first movie; it was really good. But I've seen a couple of the other ones, but not like a big thing. I love this book. It's been tons of fun. I'm so glad it's just going to keep going. I think that's really cool. Yeah. Are you guys reading it?
I just love how this it's the I'm not reading it. I have no interest in the apes. Not that the apes are bad. Apes are fine. I'm not passing judgment. I'm not interested. But I just love the story of this, where it's this random one-off, like Gabe and Karina going to Boom and saying, "Hey, can we do an apes book?"
Well, and that was the thing; like, yeah. They were totally into it.
Yeah, yeah, and the fact that now it's become a thing, and in less, I mean, because remember the first one came out at New York Comic Con last year.
I talked to them about it in San Diego last year, so just a touch over a year ago.
So it came out at New York Comic Con, and that was a year ago, and this is now the third series. Like, I'd love that it's gotten fan support and momentum.
I feel like the apes fans are really passionate about this kind of thing, and the books have been good. I didn't read this one. I fell off in the last one. I don't remember why. I loved the first mini. The first mini was fantastic. It was a pick of the week. There was a pick of the week in there, but I fell off. But I'll probably go back and get these and click when they come out.
I'm here to tell you it's absolutely worth it. Like, it's just more, and like, they're going to get deeper into society now that they've got it. And you know, when they say ape does not kill ape, they totally do. that's all there is to it.
Yeah. How much do you wish?
Especially Gabe, the filthy chimps.
How much do you wish Gabe was drawn it?
You know, I got to tell you, like, I'd love that because, you know, I love his artwork, but it's not bad. They keep finding guys who fit because, honestly, dude's a little particular about art.
Yeah.
No. You know, I wasn't aware of that.
The last guy, Mark Laming, I'm going to say. I mean, like, he was almost just aping.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even mean to do it, but the word was about to come out and I couldn't think of another one. I was like, we're just going to have to go with it.
Yeah.
And this is a little bit different. Let me see who it is, but you know, it looks the right style. You know, originally they had Jordi Belair coloring it, which certainly didn't help, but now
every project I look at, she's colored. It seems like she's been working her butt off.
Yeah. Yeah. Damien Cusiero is the artist with colorist by Darren Moore. So I don't know who those people are.
Cool.
But you know, Gabe does a cover. There's 97 different covers.
Well, that's the Boom thing. I'm so perplexed by the covers thing because, again, like I saw on Silk Spectre in the credits, it was a variant cover by Mike Allred. What did that look like?
It looked good.
Yeah. Did you see it?
In my store, the store I shop at has all of them on the glass case on the, you know, the register.
I want to see what these. Why doesn't DC post this?
I don't know.
I'm going to write an email. I'm going to write an angry letter.
If only there was someone at DC who you could email about.
Writing an angry letter. I'm going to handwrite it.
Could you post it?
While you do that.
To whom it may concern.
It was 0 month. It is 0 month at DC Comics, so all the issues are going back to zero until
it's stories
from the past, and I read them all this week.
This will not stand.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9... 10, 11, 12, 13, zero issues.
Oh, you read them all. I did not read them all. I read five of them.
You must be dehydrated.
I thought this was a quality week overall, so I didn't really feel like that pressing, just despair from reading a lot of bad comics. But, you know, in 13 books, you're going to get a wide variety of quality. But I thought the top books were Green Lantern Zero, which I thought was the best issue since the first Green Lantern. Similarly, Action Comics Zero, again, was the best issue since the first one. Action Comics Zero was amazing.
Wait. Are we going down the rundown? Because I read some of these, too.
Three of my top ones. Oh, I'm just going to read list my top three, and you can talk about whichever ones you want, Ron. And then the Phantom Stranger number zero, which is basically the first issue of Phantom Stranger, which is setting off a new series of a character who's going to be very important in the Trinity War. That's the first big event from the new DCU. So I liked, you know, a lot of them. Detective was good. I enjoyed Swamp Thing. I enjoyed Animal Man quite a bit. I enjoyed World's Finest and Earth 2, but there was some clunkers in there, of course. Yeah. Ron, what'd you think?
Well, so Green Lantern, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was bad. I kind of cringed a little at the Middle Eastern guy robs a van that happens to have a bomb in it. It just all seemed to be very stereotype typical convenience, but I guess that's where the drama came from. But
I heard the term heavy-handed.
Yeah, it was a little heavy in that regard. But
he's actually American, not Middle Eastern.
Well, I mean Middle Eastern descent. You know, I mean,
believe he's Arab American.
Arab. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean, you know, like, but So I thought that was a little heavy, but it was okay. I didn't quite understand where it fit. It fits
basically now, as far as I know. So Hal Jordan is gone.
Yeah, so it's more of an origin now than going before the New 52 started.
Well, it starts before the New 52 started and goes through time to now, just like Phantom Stranger does that too, because it's they're books that are going to affect things going forward.
Yeah, it sounds like Spaceballs.
exactly. I thought Action Comics was great.
Yeah,
I thought it was great. I mean, it's basically, you know, like the focus on the cape and the early stage, and I feel like we didn't get enough of Clark, Superman, and Jean's Superman.
This was the Superman series you thought you were going to get.
Yeah.
This was Clark showing up in Metropolis, getting the costume, getting a job, getting an apartment, inspiring kids to stand up for themselves. I love the gag with the cape that was indestructible.
Yep.
So the kid wrapped around his fist and punched his abusive dad.
Yeah, smart.
And tried to stab him and the knife broke. So I loved all that stuff. I mean, this was great.
Yeah.
This was wonderful.
I enjoyed Animal Man. I thought it fit right into the whole general Animal Man stuff. I wish I could read the comics that happened before Animal Man number one and when this ended, though. Because I just really like, and we get a glimpse as Lemire continues to kind of put his mark on Animal Man and tap into what other people have previously done, but morph it just a little. I mean, this is kind of a retcon to a certain degree, although it's continuing the retcon that he already did, even though I know there's no continuity to retcon, but you know what I mean. But the moment Buddy getting his costume and figuring out his powers and stuff like that, that's that fun moment with any superhero. They're all like, oh, I want to read all those stories.
It's the greatest American hero moment.
Yeah, exactly. Believe it or not, it's just me.
I like the idea that he isn't the primary avatar the daughter was always going to be, so he's basically just the stopgap avatar.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's
never good enough.
Yeah.
He's not as powerful as he should be. He doesn't really know what he's doing because they're like, we'll just make him powerful enough so he can deal with, so he can have his daughter, and she'll save us. So that was fun.
Earth 2, again, going back to, we just saw the Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman dead when Earth 2 started, so it was nice to get a glimpse of what those characters were like in this world. Left me wanting more, you know?
Yeah.
And Swamp Thing was similar to Animal Man, but is the one I was least kind of, like, excited about, so.
Yeah, and it's also the one that was most definitive. Like, that was basically, this leads up to when he came out of the swamp. So, I mean, that's not much to tell beyond that. There was good and bad stuff through all of it. Stormwatch, I was kind of bored by. G.I. Combat had one good story, one bad story. I really wish they would lose this colorist who does Kevin Maguire's work. He's really just butchering it. But what can you do?
Awful.
What can you do? But they were fun. I don't know if I'm going to read them all going forward, but we'll see.
There are so many wonderful colorists, and so few of them are working for DC.
Yeah, it's true.
They just don't care, I guess. No, they don't.
I think you should commit to reading all every zero that comes out, Connor.
Can you, Ron? Can you put a note about that in your letter?
What, that this should not stand? This coloring.
Yeah, but
and
just
while
part,
I'm on
like,
the topic of your comic books,
I take issue
with your choices of colorists.
Let's just keep a running tab just in case anything else comes up.
Okay, I got my pen and my legal pad, so I'm writing furiously, and you know my handwriting.
Are you holding the pen like you would a dagger?
Yes.
He tore through the paper at one or two points. It was
I forget what it was we were mad about to begin with. The publisher. It's gonna be like Zodiac.
I also forgot, Josh. Why are we mad in the first place?
I don't know. I've forgotten already.
Oh, what was it? I don't remember either.
5 minutes ago.
It was varying covers.
Variant covers. This will. I am very upset by your choice of lack of promotion for variant covers.
Yeah, there you go.
Not that I want to buy them.
Not that I want to buy them. I would just like to see them as a loyal reader of many years.
But the thing is, like, I mean, you could admit you didn't really make any effort.
No, I mean, zero effort.
So what you're saying is you would like to have seen them without trying or knowing that it was a thing.
Here's the thing.
No, but they don't put them out anywhere. They
Knowing what we do and the amount of email we get from the publishers, if I haven't seen it,
I know what you're saying.
So I can't imagine what Joe Schmo in Kenosha is you know who he wants to see the Mike Allred cover. He'll never see it if I'm the guy who's getting the barrage of emails and UPS packages and letters and just phone calls and texts and everything that every imaginable mode a PR person has to get in touch with us. If I don't know what the cover looks like, Joe and Kenosha has no fucking clue. And Joe and Kenosha is a big fan.
You can get in touch with Mike Allred.
I could just
But that again is not his.
No, that's not the purview of the everyday man.
Right.
So it's a sort of a case in point. I mean, what he's saying. Have you considered a cipher?
I know. I really need to figure out my cipher.
Just before you just make sure you have the cipher down.
I find that they really respond well if you just cut all the words out of a magazine.
No, I like the cipher. It's good.
You can do both.
Yeah.
do it that way in the cipher.
Well, now I know what I'm doing tonight. But my whole thing is that, like, we are bell ringers, right? That is our job. We get the message and we spread the word.
I don't know if I want that title.
Well, we are.
Bell ringer.
Yeah.
You're Paul Revere.
We're Paul Revere for comics.
It's a little European.
We have
your town criers.
We have an important job to do. And I'm gonna go to Google. I'm gonna type in Watchmen variant cover Allred. Oh, there it is. Oh, that's a nice cover.
We're still gonna do the letter, though, right?
Yeah, no, this will not stand.
All right, good.
Oh, there it is, right on DC's website. It's on the blog.
Let's move on to the final issue of
August
Near Death.
August 7th. Good job, something DC. Else. Got the word out.
It's amazing the progress they just made. How'd they even know?
This is a great cover. I totally would have bought the shit out of this cover.
No, you wouldn't. They would charge you like $50 for it.
Sure, good point. Anyway, sorry.
On Near Death number 11.
Near Death number 11. So, sadly, the last issue. Wah, wah.
Almost got a year out of it.
I tried my hardest to get you people to read this book. This was a blast.
Couldn't even get us to read it.
Well, I read the first three or so. It was really...
There's the problem.
Yeah.
It ended in a good place. Jay Ferber, the writer, admits in the letter column, this isn't the ending. I'll give the exact quote. Yes, when I conceived the series, I knew what the ending would be. --. And this isn't it. So
that's not as sad as the Savage Dragon letter column.
Yeah, no, it's not as sad as Larson and the Savage Dragon letter column this week. Not a good look, to quote Jason Wood. Not a good look. But Jay's very honest with it. Just sales wasn't where they needed to be on a monthly basis, and so he's looking at this like the whole premise of this book was to be like a kind of action 80s TV show, and this is kind of like a series finale. So I don't know what the numbers were on it or what it takes, but hopefully we'll get some more Near Death, in the future. He wrapped up the story, left Markham in a good spot. And he just says, he says he doesn't feel like him and the creative team are done with the book, and that's good to hear. So go pick up the trade. Maybe we'll get new life in that regard. And also check out Point of Impact, his next series, which is coming out in October. It looks really cool.
You think creator-owned heroes will make it to 11 issues?
I don't know.
Do you guys read this at all?
No.
Sometimes.
All right. Well, here's how it works with me. I am looking at the pictures.
Okay.
Not really reading it.
Interesting.
I'm sort of going through it because Phil Noto and Kevin Mellon on it.
Pretty, yeah.
You know the story Trigger Girl 6? It's the Phil Noto story.
Yeah.
Okay, there are a lot of talking animals at the end of it. And I was like, well, on the one hand, I didn't see this coming. On the other hand, I don't like it at all. There was he breaks into a room and there's a bear and he's like, let me tell you what happened, son. And there's a lot of the animals explaining what happened. There's an angry eagle.
Well, the eagle's always angry. I watch a lot of Muppets. I know that angry.
He was literally
eagle.
Like, he's like, don't you say a thing or I'm going to rip your throat out.
Listen, the eagle's almost hunted to extinction, so it should be, it's got a right to be angry.
It had an environmental message. It's not really what I was going for. And that what happened was Trigger Girl 6 was like a clone of the president's mom. And she had...
Which president?
The Barbara. President. He wasn't a real one. I definitely wasn't Barack Obama. All right. I can tell you that.
Was the president from Escape from New York? Was it Cliff Robertson?
I don't... Uncle Ben?
Yeah. Was it Chick King?
First Uncle Ben? Oddly enough, second Uncle Ben, also a president.
Weird. They were both president.
Wow. That's great. Let's move on.
Ron, are you still reading The Punisher?
I am.
I think this is after Garth Ennis's run. This might be and after Jason Aaron's Max run, this might be my favorite Punisher story.
Really?
I think overall the story that Ruck has been telling through these 15 issues, and there's only a few more left until they... I think reboot the series as Punisher Warzone.
Well, no, they're going to finish the story in Warzone, basically, because they're
Well, anyway, I think this tale he's telling with this woman who's being sort of becoming the Lady Punisher, but also being redeemed, and this whole conspiracy theory and the war that they've been taking to these people has been fascinating, and I think the Marco Cicchetto art has been wonderful. This is a Punisher story unlike I've read before, and I really like it.
Yeah, this is really. Realistic.
Yeah.
Like, really brutally realistic.
I need to read this from the beginning.
Yes. And I do love, I mean, honestly, I like the bearded, one-eyed Punisher. I like it.
Yeah.
It's a good look.
His days are numbered.
Yeah. And I like when he gives her the bulletproof vest with the skull and says, where's the skull? It terrifies them. And know what I did love about this was I loved once the tear gas hit, Connor, did you see just the skull shadow periodically throughout the tear gas?
I think they're doing some wonderful artwork, not just the drawing, but the coloring, which would probably be where that comes from. But yeah, I did.
So basically, this crazy guy takes over a bank, and the cops are all on it, and shooting up people. The cops throw tear gas in it, and then as you're going, the stuff's going on, and everyone's yelling and like, "Where movement?" And you just see all you see in the background is you just see the skull, because you know like Punisher is on the move, and you don't know where he is, and it's at the same time horrifying, but also like exciting. So
really, yeah. No, I think this is one of the better issues, too. This is one of the best ones I've done. Overall, I think this tale that Ruck is telling has been fantastic.
Yeah. So if I were to say, I'm going to say a couple of names, okay? Mm-hmm. Anthony Johnston, who we know from the book, what's the...
Down the Walk.
Wasteland and stuff like that, yep. Alan Moore.
I know him.
I don't know him.
And Malcolm McLaren.
The Sex Pistols?
Yes.
On the shop owner. Did not design the stroller/supercar.
No. It's basically a comic book called Fashion Beast, which was a story that McLaren came up with in the 80s and Alan Moore helped write, and then they tried to make into a film, and there was a screenplay written by Alan Moore, and it never went anywhere. And Anthony Johnston, with Alan Moore's blessing, dusted off the screenplay, and now has at Avatar, of course, has worked with Facundo Percio, the artist, to adapt it into a comic book. And it gets better from there. A big factor of Fashion Beast directly ties into the song Deep in Vogue that Malcolm McLaren put out in 1989, which Madonna ripped off for her song Vogue.
Yeah.
So this is just oozing with pop culture kind of and basically at the end of this issue, there's a cross-dressing coat check girl, and she's at a nightclub, and she starts voguing, and the whole crowd is screaming, and they're all voguing with her and that sort of thing. And I just saw it on the rack, and I'm like, I can't not buy this. It's a fucking...
I can understand that you... Ron would not be able to not buy that.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm on board.
Well, good for you.
It's fascinating. I never thought I'd read a Malcolm McLaren comic book. That's pretty cool. So, Alan Moore.
You ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
Anyway.
I know. Yeah. It's all I had, dude.
I know. Fair enough.
It wasn't bad. I had the accident.
Archer and Armstrong number 2 from Valiant. I'm really in this of the Valiant books. I am enjoying Archer and Armstrong quite a bit, and I like what Van Lente's doing in terms of the bringing these two unlikely kind of this pairing together. You know, it's very steeped in kind of there's a religious kind of overtone type thing, but like religious conspiracy. But they go to Italy and it got very Indiana Jones and Last Crusade-y, where, you know, they're in an old, you know, church and they hit a thing on a statue and it opens up a door and then this whole big, you know, like this whole...
Was there a Knight Templar there?
No, there wasn't a Knight Templar, but there was a sect of nuns, of old nuns. So, Knight nuns.
Which did the nuns say you chose poorly?
No, no, they're going to administer...
I want to watch Last Crusade now.
I know, I kind of do. I know, oh, man.
It doesn't
fucking Raiders isn't playing in my city. What the hell?
I once missed a class in college because it came on TV.
That's not even a thing where I'm even the least bit surprised. Yeah. And that doesn't sound like it was an infrequent occurrence.
It came on HBO and I was like, oh look, it's crap.
MacGyver's on.
Exactly.
Like so. You said, oh crap. Yeah. You're like, yee-hee. Connie, you going? Nope.
Pretty much.
Here's what I can tell you about Archer and Armstrong 2. Yep. A lot of narrative heavy lifting going on here.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a lot of talking.
Yeah, there was.
Because this is a big story that he's trying to get out and get all that gunk out of the way so that he can keep going.
I'm liking Clayton Henry a lot, though.
Hmm?
I'm liking Clayton Henry a lot.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
No, I mean, I just thought, I mean, it's very, I mean, it's getting the job done. I mean, and it's, you know, it's a clean, he's got a clean line. And there's that with the one page where the, when they're in the church and the walls are coming in on them and the panel stepping down to, you know, kind of illustrate the squeeze that was going on. It shows promise. If it, you know, if it can break free from the, I feel like it's playing it very safe.
A little.
Yeah.
It's a little obvious.
Yes. Yeah. But if they push it a little more, then they can have something cool here. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, Ron, the last time we talked about this book, you hadn't read the issue yet. Did you read Smallville, season 11, number 5?
Smallville. It's sitting on my tablet. I'm going to read them. I will.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the first issue where Batman and Nightwing show up in the Smallville world.
Oh, my God. Really?
Is it characters never allowed to be touched.
Is it Ian Somerhalder? Does it look like him?
No, it's similar to the problems we've had in the series before, and this is Crisscross instead of Per Perez on the art duties, in that the story's great, the script is great, the characterizations are great, the dialogue's great, it's that the art is really rough.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they are skimping on the art on these general interest books, because Smallville would be the one of those books you could put out there and people would buy because they love the show, and in much greater numbers in Who Read Comics. And to me, the art is really... And Chris Cross is a veteran. He's been around for a while. And Per Perez is a veteran as well. And he did completely different kind of work on Batgirl. For some reason, they're both employing a strange style that sort of gives everybody's bulbous faces. And sometimes they're dead on actors, and sometimes they don't look anything like them. And
right,
it's rough. It's art's rough, but the story's great. Batman is fun. The interplay between Batman and Nightwing, or Bruce and Barbara in civilian get up, is great. She's a fun character. Similar moment to the Action Comics, where a bus is full of kids is being hijacked, and a little kid's wearing a Superman T-shirt. So he says he's not gonna let this happen. He's gonna stand up for what's right. And, you know, good stuff. Good stuff in it.
All right, maybe I'll catch up on it this weekend.
Story's good. You will enjoy the story. Yeah. It's just that the art is rough.
Yeah,
that's all.
So the first X-Men number 2, Neil Adams and Christos Gage's story of basically going X-Men First Class. I could do that better.
This didn't need to happen.
And it doesn't need to happen at all. But and my problem with the first issue was that it seemed, again, talking about playing it safe. It just wasn't. It was
crazy enough.
It was kind of boring. It wasn't that crazy. This issue starts to cater into the crazy. Because I'm reading along and it's normal, and they're the Wolverine and Sabretooth and this team that he's put together, which has a Bigfoot like esque guy and this a girl who's called Hollow, who can H-O-L-O, who can make holograms, can make, you know, people see, you know, something else, and this kid who's got energy powers, and they're all hanging out in upstate New York in Wolverine's kind of hideaway cabin. And the woman, Hollow, is bringing in a plate of, you know, burgers. And just Wolverine just goes, ah, and attacks her.
I like Neil Adams' books as narrated by Ron Richard.
Just like,
you should get the audiobook contract, Ron.
You should. And don't read it. Just tell me what's happening.
Like, I probably should have put this in the best week of panels, because it's like Sabretooth is like eating a burger and Wolverine's in the background. And like... And Wolverine just jumps at her, and she like throws the food up in the air, and it like it reminded me of the old wacky Justice League Aquaman in the 80s that Tom Cater's did the podcasts about, with Aquaman right. hiding in the pool to sucker punch Citizen Seal. And then the kid who has these energy powers, he gets these little bubbles on his body, and then he's got a Wolverine's teaching him how to use his powers. The text is actually Wolverine saying, "These boils, they're energy inside you. It's like they look like boils on his body." Just like, so it's starting to get a little wacky. And then you get to Magneto, who's got crazy hair, and he's wearing a suit and a cape, and he looks ridiculous. So, yeah, not quite the level of fun that Batman Odyssey was, but it's showing promise.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So.
So, those are the books we wanted to talk about, and the ones Ron really enjoyed. But you can also go to fanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list for the week, and you can rate and review your own books, and you can make your own pick of the week. And let's read off the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience. And this is at the time of recording, number five, because the numbers are close and they've been changing just as we speak. Number I've got a tote board that it updates live on my living room wall.
But it's cardboard, so he's got a guy. He's a volunteer, public radio volunteer.
It's an intern. He just comes in and just changes. We told
him
white out.
We told him that Connor was public radio. So just if everyone could keep that on the down low.
Yeah. Number five, Green Lantern number zero with 2.3%. Number four with Action Comics number zero with 3.1%. Number three was Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 14 with 3.3%. Number two in a strong showing, not numbers-wise, but in placement-wise, Planet of the Apes, Cataclysm, number one, 3.8%, which means number one was Hawkeye, two, with 68.2%, and well-deserved for Hawkeye. I don't know what I would have picked, because it was close between Action, Silk Spectre, and Hawkeye, but
That is easily the best rating Matt Fraction has ever received on our website.
Yeah, yes, it really absolutely. Is. Yeah,
and well-deserved.
I'll tell you what my pick of the week was.
You're a liar.
My pick of the week was... No, I'm not. But our first review comes from Marcavo, who reviewed Black Kiss 2, number 2, from that modern master, Howard Chaykin. And Marcavo gives the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, which I disagree with because I felt the story was stronger in this issue. But anyway, Marcavo says nobody made it their pick of the week this week. And Marcavo says there are less, quote-unquote, bros in Hawkeye number 1 than there are dicks in this book.
Wow. With a lot of dicks.
I'll stick around for issue number 3, and if I don't see some solid plot crystallize, I'll have to drop it. Maybe I'll have to reread it set to some CD keyboard music with a Waka Waka vibe to ignore the fact that the story isn't very solid before I quote unquote get it. Did I like it? I'm not sure. It's certainly an interesting commentary from Chaykin, and it's wonderfully drawn. You got to go read it again because this immediately picks up from the last issue. And the story is right there, is that there's this soul-eating succubus that is passed through sex from person to person through the century.
No, there isn't.
Yeah, there is.
It's not.
Did you read it?
No. But listen, what you're seeing, it's between you and there's a lot of dicks.
Listen, I'll tell you, there's a lot of cock in this book. There's a lot of dicks in this book. And we're not talking.
And at the end of the day, that's what most people are going to be taking away from it.
That said, though, again, Chaykin is just, oh my God, the backgrounds are just so detailed.
You're really obsessed with the backgrounds.
I'm not sure there are backgrounds.
Yes, there are.
Because I'm pretty sure I didn't notice any in the first one.
What?
Listen, I may have had my focus elsewhere.
Oh, I see. I get you.
It may have been that there was a lot of dicks.
I'll tell you what about this. It's dirty.
Yeah, we know because of the sheer number of dicks. Because anytime you have that many dicks, there's really not a chance that it's not going to be dirty.
And let's be honest, by the way, while there is a lot of dick, there's also a lot of three ways. I mean, like, it's not, you know, like there's a lot of boobs and there's a lot of, you know.
But again, as I like to point out, if you talk, wasn't the good kind. There was a lot of.
Josh, did you read this issue?
No, God, no.
I think you should.
Yeah.
Really?
I think you'd offer a good counterpoint to Ron's. I think the you know.
Do you think that anything I said is going to be different after having read it?
It's good.
Well, you'd have specific examples to point to.
Okay. Well, okay.
At least glance through it.
Listen, when the next time it comes up, I will read it for the show.
All right, cool. Great. Excellent.
Greg Roy 42 reviewed Mind the Gap number 4 and gave the story 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And pick leak percentage was, is this correct?
I believe it is.
2%. So that means it just missed the top 5. And Greg Roy 42 says, this is a mind-bending journey that leaves you guessing. But at the end of this, I feel fulfilled, not empty. I've grown to care about Elle, hate her father, love Joe, and have become suspicious of Dane. This is what a good story should do, pull you in, and I'm on the edge of my seat waiting to see what happens next.
I thought this got a little wacky with the wolves and the fantasy sequence, but again, I'm right on board. I'm enjoying it. So,
yeah, no, I think he is, McCann is who's the writer, is playing around with the whole fantasy aspect of it. I think to me the most compelling part is the mystery, but you know, I think it's holding together well so far.
Yeah. Cool. So those are the books that you reviewed and enjoyed. Go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can make your pick of the week and write reviews and get it on the show.
Next up, we're going to do some emails. First one comes from Craig. And Craig wondered if the three of you, that's us, could help me out. I was having a debate with a couple of guys at work and could really use some backup.
We got you. We got your back.
We might. You could listen. You don't know.
No.
Craig, don't commit us until we know.
Craig is one of us.
Nazis were.
I'm not leaving
now
Craig.
You fucked us.
I'm not leaving Craig behind. Craig's one of us. I got your back, Craig.
Wait.
I'm not saying I won't. I want to know what he's talking about first.
Are we talking about the Nazis from a style standpoint?
Oh, God, Josh, don't. Just read
Please
the email.
Just read on.
Just read it.
I got myself. Somebody else is going to have to take over.
Craig says, a couple of the guys the other day at work were arguing about Batman. That Batman isn't a superhero because he doesn't have superpowers or abilities. He's just a man with cool toys who has trained all his life. My defending argument was that, firstly, he was one of the greatest superheroes, doing everything with his powers to do the right thing without the superhuman abilities of his fellow superheroes being the very definition of a superhero. I then broke it down into the two words, super meaning great, excellent, large, and superior, and hero, a person of distinguished courage, of ability, admired for their qualities and nobility. Batman is all of this and more. For me, the term superhero is an archetype rather than a rigid, definitive category. So here's his question. How do you define a superhero? Is Batman a superhero? And do powers define a superhero, or is there more to it? Please back me up.
Craig, your friends are pedantic dicks.
Yes, we got your back, Craig. We got your back.
And they're wasting your time.
Yep.
Better than your average guy. Yep. Batman has no superpowers, but he's better than your average guy. He's doing more with what he has. He's putting it all on the line. He's a goddamn superhero. He's the superhero.
This is the point in the work conversation where I look for an exit.
Oh, yeah.
Why? You disagree?
I agree completely, but if this is the what's going on.
Oh, at his work. Office, I'm like, work. I thought this is the point at our work where you're looking for an exit.
I hit my breaking point. 12 years, and now I'm no, this is if I'm Craig, I'm just like, what's going on over there? Yeah. And
there's
get
nothing
out.
To win. You're fighting. They don't know. It's like they're whack jobs. Yeah. Don't. I mean, I wouldn't play this for them because it's just going to wind them up and you'll be wasting a lot of time. But I mean, you can know it. You can know it in your heart. It's fine.
I think Batman's completely a superhero. I think that powers don't define the hero. I think their ability. I think their actions define it. And that's what's so great about Batman is that, you know, through training and a lot of money, he's able to hone himself and become a superhero. You know, so I don't think there's anything. Although this does remind me of the Seinfeld bit about Superman versus Thor, and how Thor would win because Superman, he's a Superman. Thor's a god. So, anyway.
He's not really a man, though. That's why it's a misnomer.
Right, no, I know. Anyway.
Super alien.
All right, on to our next question from Scott, who says, if the comic market is supposedly shrinking and dying, and it's hard to find new titles to find an audience, how come it seems literally dozens of new expanding publishers, Image Expanding, Monkey Brain, Aw Yeah, Valiant, relaunching, etc., are jumping into the market with both feet? How are small publishers other than Image staying in business constantly but producing titles that sell less than 10,000 copies, which I thought was the minimum for break-even profitability?
That's an arbitrary number.
Yeah, there's no actual number because it really depends on what they put into it.
Right, and many Image books don't sell 10,000, so...
And they don't make that money.
Yeah. I think you are giving things like Monkey Brain and Aw Yeah and maybe Valiant a little more credit. I mean, they're here now. Let's see in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta understand, like... From what I understand, this Monkey Brain there's not a lot of upfront costs. Right. People are bringing their projects to the fore, whether those creators are paying artists or not. They're just doing the work for free, and then they're being sold digitally. So there's not a lot of overhead. Yep. As far as I understand. So you know, that's one reason. You know, I don't know what the story is behind Valiant. Obviously, they had to have some capital to keep going, but I doubt they've made it back yet. So it's probably like a question of, you know, cash burn versus hoping they can build an audience, you know, before they run out. And we've seen this lots of times before. But I think the other thing is that a lot of the smaller publishers, they run right on the edge of profit and loss a lot of times. And
it only takes one big loss to...
Or a delayed diamond payment we've heard stories about book returns.
Yeah, there have been several publishers who have nearly gone out of business because a big chain like Borders goes out of business and returns everything right before they do.
Yeah, and so they didn't really count on that loss of cash. Yeah. But you're right, and I've thought, the industry isn't shrinking and dying, it's changing.
No, I think it's a fact of we're in a great kind of entrepreneurial environment where people are like, you know, I could, you know, like I got an idea, you know, the tools are there, I could give it a shot, and I think that's great. I think that's what
they're also seeing that there's people on the outside are seeing money in comics, whether it's there,
yeah,
and they want to get in on it, whether they can get it is another thing.
Tool wise, you know, there's more tools to more cheaply and effectively produce comics than ever.
That's true. Also.
Talent-wise, we're probably at as good a place as we've ever been for creating sort of a adult contemporary sort of comic book based stories,
like Kenny G,
exactly,
or Michael Bolton. Let's do a Michael Bolton comic.
And that's the end of that email. So if you've got any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
He just loves that woman, Ron.
He does. On to the voicemail. Our first voicemails. Got a question that's probably going to lead me to write a letter.
Hey, this is Brandon from Denton, Texas. I had a question, especially with DC's new cover treatment for the Zero issue month. Does it ever bother you guys that they get other artists to do covers for comics and then a completely different artist to do the interiors? I understand they're trying to move units, but sometimes it kind of irritates me when I see a really good artist doing the cover and a maybe subpar artist doing the interior. Is this the way the industry is, and should I get over it, or does it kind of irk you too? Anyway, I'd love to hear what you say. Love the show, guys. Thanks.
And another thing, Mr. Publisher, your cover tactics irk me.
Tactics, I like that.
Yeah,
good.
Tactics.
you need an appendices for your letter.
Listen, I don't appreciate your ruse. my take on it is I'm actually, and I don't know whether I have no idea whether you guys agree with me or not, I'm fine with a different artist doing the cover than the interior, like because it definitely it's a known sales booster, and you get a cool piece of art by an artist that you may like or you may not like. I just hate it when it's got nothing to do with the interior. That's all.
See, this is the thing that you used to say
that
all the time.
That's your argument in the letter.
Yeah, that's
you should put that in there too.
Yeah,
of course, still happening.
Yeah.
Okay, and related but not directly the same thing, Mr. Publisher.
Yes.
Yeah.
While I was
working on a comic book project, and we asked a guy to do a cover for us. Yeah. And the guy said, I'll do it, but the artist of the book should probably put his signature on it instead. It makes more of a statement. And I really liked that. And I think that one of the things is what he's talking about is the covers are promising a lot more than the interiors are delivering a lot of times. And that is a letdown.
Yeah.
When you looked at the pick of the week, Hawkeye number two this week, you know, the dude gave you a full package inside and out. And I got to appreciate that. And, you know, sometimes it's fun. There's guys, great artists who don't do interiors. So they're only going to do covers, but, you know, yeah, like all things being equal, I think it'd be good.
You're talking about the switcheroo. You're talking about where it's like
the switcheroo is very bad.
Yeah, the switcheroo is bad. But I think the challenge is that you get an artist to do the cover it's a clear delineation. It's clearly credited and it's clearly all stuff like that. You know, I never actually thought about that, but I'm looking at this Before Watchmen Silk Spectre, and that's Amanda Connor doing it, and it's telling the story of the issue. Which is great. I mean, even First X-Men's a Neil Adams cover, and that's covering what happens in the issue. You know, so
to be fair,
is it Wolverine lunging at the food?
No, it's Magneto throwing a car at Wolverine.
If you've got a sort of okay artist inside a book, I could see why you would want to put them on the cover.
You're gonna have to sell the book somehow, especially the smaller publishers. That's why they hire John Cassaday to do all the Dynamite covers, and then Alex Ross does all the Dynamite covers, and now Frank Avia, because. You know, some people they got big fans, and then they're not selling the book any other way.
Let's not be too hasty. Frank Avia can do all the covers, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that's why they do it, because they've got.
He's giving it a go.
Yeah, he is. So.
he's giving it the old try.
All right, we got one last quick voicemail.
Hey guys, this is James from Indianapolis. I took your recommendation and picked up all three of the Parker books, and you were 100% right. They were great, and I love them. and I'm now a huge converted Darwin Cook fan. And I'm looking for other things that he has done. So I went and looked him up, but all I see is a whole bunch of single issues. So what's the deal? What can you tell me about him? And can you recommend a couple of things that he's done in the past that you think I should pick up? Thanks.
What can we tell you about Darwin Cook? He's very intimidating in person.
That's true.
It's true.
He just, and he makes you feel like less of a man.
Yeah, that's true, too.
But he's also I can tell you about him. Work-wise, though, he hasn't done a lot of runs. But he's done a couple of great. Everything he's done has been great.
Well, this is
currently he's doing the Before Watchmen book, the Minutemen. If you want to pick something up that's current.
Well, this is the easiest question to answer. It's everything. Like if you see his name on it, get it. You know, like he's never
single issues.
He's never let me down. I mean, you know. But in terms of books, like so, he's doing the Minutemen now. I mean, New Frontier is the biggie, right?
That's probably the classic one. Yeah.
Yeah. His run on Catwoman was fairly definitive, I believe.
He only did like 3 issues.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And then he left the book very quickly. So it's not really a run.
There was a Batman story.
Batman Ego. Selena's Big Score.
And then The Spirit was 12 issues of Solid.
And The Spirit was fantastic. Yeah. That's not an absolute, is it?
No.
It
should
That's
be.
Stupid.
Should be. It is stupid.
Didn't sell, though.
So.
I know, but it should be. Just
so the Spirit run with the first 12 issues, New Frontier was five
big issues, weren't they?
They were big oversized. It's an absolute edition. It's in 2 trades. It's Darwin doing the entire DC universe. If you want to see him do that kind of thing,
get it.
The Spirit, Parker books, which you've read, the Minutemen, which is coming out now. And then there's a Darwin Cook Batman trade that DC put out, which includes Ego and includes stuff he's written, but not necessarily drawn. But also there's a Selena story he did draw. So look for that Batman. I think it's called Ego and Other Stories, and it's all Darwin Cook stuff. And he's done stuff here and there, but those are really the collections you want to look
for. If you ever go issue diving, man, you know, you can't go wrong with any of the single issues that Jonah Hex did, or the Shade issue he just did recently, or it's just great. You know, they're all looking good.
They're all good stuff. Yeah. So cool. So if you have any questions, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
We have other podcasts besides this one, and you should check them out. We have the Don't Miss podcast comes out on Mondays, where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out that Wednesday. And this week I talked to Walt Simonson.
Pretty cool.
About the Judas Coin, an OGN coming out from DC Comics. And I'm telling you, man, I've admired that guy forever. And when you talk to him and he lives up to that, it's just the best feeling on earth. I didn't want to hang up. So really great talking to him. Dude loves comic book art. Even after all this time, it's really cool. There's also the Make Comics podcast. We talked to Tyler James of Comics Tribe last week about Kickstarter because he knows his stuff on Kickstarter. So that's if you're an indie creator, you need to know that is an option. You don't necessarily need to do it, but you should be aware of it. So that's a good starter on that. And every week we talk about other things to get into if you're making comics and things you should know. So those two podcasts are available for your enjoyment.
Oh, good for you.
Look at you.
Meanwhile, check out ifanboy.com for Josh's Pick of the Week review. You can read my Book of the Month review soon. I just have to write it, including all the. And then, in addition to that, you got all the in-depth daily discussion, all of the Marvel teasers, which really don't tell you anything other than one word, and all the fun stuff happening every day at ifanboy.com. Go to fanboy.com/about, see the staff page and the social network links to be our friends online, and follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to get all the news and all the updates. A lot of questions you send in are answered by following ifanboy.com every day.
Fair enough. If you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Great voicemails this week. Short to the point, playable, because they weren't real long, but with really good questions for discussion. So try that out and tell us who you are and where you're from. That's interesting to us.
And if you like what we do, go to iTunes and write a review for this podcast, as well as the iFanboy Don't Miss and Make Comics. Actually, don't write a review for this podcast. We've got more than we need. Go write them for iFanboy Don't Miss and for Make Comics. Help spread the word for those books. And also, better yet, you know, tell your friends, tell people you know, help spread the word. Go to conventions, tell them about the great thing of iFanboy that you've discovered. And hopefully we'll see a bunch of you soon at New York Comic Con, and you can tell us how great you like us there.
Or not. We're fine with any of them.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't want to tell us something nice, it's fine. But just, you know, do it politely. Do it.
And to give you a little more, so last week was the awesome episode 350, and we had such a great time, and you guys got to see a lot of behind the scenes of iFanboy, and I'll give you another little glimpse of behind the scenes at iFanboy, where our good friend Josh tried a little too hard to get me to stumble on the script this week, and we got a little too big for his britches, but I'm smarter than that. So
I just think that's really funny.
So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.